This is Mae Brussel at KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. I'm still not used to that Pacific Grove. I feel like it's Carmel because they're just very close to each other. But it is Pacific Grove, and this is KAZU-FM. This is broadcast number 562 at September the 13th, 1982. For those of you that subscribe to the tapes or order the printed sheets, the bibliographies that go with these radio broadcasts, I've listed a second time the source of information on the Wall Street Journal articles on the Nguyen-Han Bank, the links to the highest echelons of military, CIA, and to our Pentagon officials. I'm going to present those as I outline the articles, but they're very long, and I want to condense them for you and go through them with you, even if you have the stories. August 24th, 25th, 26th, 1982, on the Nguyen-Han Bank. Also, this week, there's a continuation on the story of the Vatican that I've been covering every week for you or mentioning, and this story's been going on for a long, long time, but it came to a head when Roberta Calvi of the Banco Ambrosiano, the president of that bank, was murdered in London in June. It's already several months ago. It doesn't seem possible. It seems like yesterday, but Calvi was murdered, and it opened up a long overdue story or exposure to the role of our CIA, of the United States, the Vatican, the Mormon Church, through David Kennedy, or many other officials in the United States, to offshore banking, to promising security for investments that the Vatican will not stand by. Time Magazine, September the 13th, 1982, has a four-part story, The Great Vatican Bank Mystery, a tale of two deaths, 12 investigations, and missing millions. And it is a story about plots of money that has been floating around, and investigations are underway in Italy, Britain, Switzerland, Luxembourg, Bahamas, and Peru. Now, if those investigations actually were underway, you would get a view of the international fascista movement. But I understand that just before I went on the air, through shortwave radio, through a researcher who lives in Salinas, a listener to World Watchers, a long friend, she said this evening that Licio Gelli was arrested in Sweden. Now, he's the gentleman that was in charge of Mussolini's security police force, who fled to Argentina, who was brought back to Italy by the Duke of Kent, the Queen of England's cousin. He set up the international fascist group that are hoping to turn the world safe for feudalism and monarchies, and for the great opus dei that I talked about before, the most fundamental, strict sect of the Catholic Church. Calvi, allegedly, by the time you get this tape or hear it on the radio, but Licio Gelli should be arrested. Now, I'm sure that he had to give himself up, and he's the only person who could pull some of the missing money that went to him out of these Swiss banks and these secret accounts. And if that money is put back into those dummy fronts in Panama and in Bahamas and Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, and so forth, the investigation would, of course, be called off or stopped. Now, there was another offer to stop an investigation this week. It came from down in Bolivia, from the Cocaine King, who runs the operations in Bolivia, and he offered to erase the debt to the United States. If he would turn himself in, the debt for Bolivia would be erased. Now, the Bank of America in California and worldwide, of course, has about money due from Bolivia, $10 million they loaned to Bolivia from the Bank of America. And the San Francisco Examiner last Wednesday had a story that the moderator for the drug connections for the Bank of America was a Christian Von Dom. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I did a broadcast of a letter I wrote to Helene Von Dom, Ronald Reagan's secretary, who has a cabinet position in Washington, saying, where are your former husband and your current husband, because she has close links to Raymond Donovan, who's under question with his mafia, Genovese Gambino, and you name it, connections. She's close to Roy Cohn, a person owning property with Lynn Nofziger, close connections during Nixon's administration with Nazis in California. Von Dumm has a husband who allegedly, according to an LA Times article, is a banker in Germany, and her current husband, whose name is not Von Dumm, is in New Jersey, where all of these scandals are breaking. And of course, it is the head of Standard Oil New Jersey and Elmer Bops, the chemical company's IG Farben, and so forth. So I wanted her to answer the letter and say where Christian Von Dumm is. Coincidentally, it turns out, his name is in the news this last week, Christian Von Dumm, the moderator for the cocaine connections and the debts of Bank of America. Now, she worked 8 years in California, so it's logical that he would have those California connections. But here's a gentleman offering to turn himself in to save the scandal of where some of these missing millions are. So maybe Licia Gelli has gone to Switzerland to save the bank their embarrassment. Another article in the Newsweek, September 13th, 1982. If you don't have these two or the three articles on Nugenhand, buy them. You can't buy them anymore. Copy them at the library because they'll be off the stands by the time you see this. The Newsweek story, Inside the Vatican Bank, and it's got a chart of the Institute for Religious Works, the Pontifical Commission for the State of Vatican, a picture of Mr. Casseroli. He's the far-right gentleman from the Opus Dei who said, and I mentioned last week, who wants the business people and the bankers to take over and make decisions for the Vatican, that wanted to buy the debts so that these exposures wouldn't come out, in return own the voice of the Vatican, which they practically do anyway. And Mr. Casseroli is a gentleman who was quoted in the newspaper saying that we should let the Vatican be in charge of foreign affairs because the United Nations isn't working. Well, this Mr. Casseroli is involved in these banking scandals. It goes into transferring money between fascist Italy and banking institutions, that this scandal involves more than 200 banks in the world, and the looting of $1.2 billion from Italy's largest private bank. They use the word looting, counterfeit securities, and the investigation's going on. Now, when any subject gets this much attention, just as Watergate drew attention in Time and Newsweek, when they carry stories on scandals, looting, murders, counterfeit stocks, dummy fronts, organized crime syndicates, with an institution such as the Vatican, then Mr. Gelli, I guess, has to sacrifice himself and come home. I will go into detail and outline these articles, but in the meantime, I've done so much on the Vatican scandals that I'm going to give it a rest for this week and go to another part of this Italian scandal that isn't separate from the Vatican. And also, I might have mentioned before, when you're at the library checking out the Nugenhand stories, Wall Street Journal, August the 30th, 1982, a story, Milan Mystery, How the Suicide of the Ambrosiano Chief Exposed the Tangled Maze of Loans to Shell Companies. This is a very good article about the Panama banks, and hopefully next week I'll do some more on Jim Jones in Panama, a group from World Watchers in Philadelphia. John Judge have put together a fantastic list of the Panamanian banks that Jim Jones was involved down in Panama, investment there, and his money, some of his money operations. The Wall Street Journal talks about the Italian press is rife with speculation. Where did the money go in Panama? Did it go to right-wing Latin American groups? Yes, it did. Did it go to the Polish Solidarity? Yes, it did. Did it go to Latin America to buy weapons, like the Exocet missile, to provide Argentina with weapons against Great Britain? Yes, it did. The international fascist group out of Italy that was formed is anti-British, it's anti-American, and this money is going to South and Central America to set up an organization or continuous series of organizations that eventually will take over the world and, as I say, make it safe for the Inquisition and for the monarchies. So I'll go into those later, but there are some other things this week that I did want to cover. Briefly, I just want to mention the death of the conductor in Oakland, this Calvin Simmons. Many of you back east hardly got a news story about it, but it makes an important story because, as described in the San Francisco Examiner and the LA Times, he was the first black to lead a major U.S. symphony orchestra. He was considered a genius and a true musical genius, working with all the who's who of the music world. He was about to go into Wagner. He was conducting Mozart and Brahms, typically the German musicians that he was interpreting and conducting. And 3 weeks from the time that he died, and he was supposed to have been in the best spirits ever, he was to play with the New York Opera and conduct there. Now, there are several articles about his death that concern me. One was August the 24th. New York search continues for body of Oakland's missing conductor. He allegedly stood up in a canoe. He fell over, and the article says the precise cause of death is not known. He immediately disappeared and never came up again. He was in good health. He was in good spirits. He knew how to canoe. He'd been up there before to the lake many times. He had been swimming and fishing, according to his mother, since he was young. He never bobbed up once, and he wasn't tangled in weeds. He was anywhere from 50 to 150 feet from the shore, and he was about as the most talented young opera conductor in the world to come to New York City. Now, an interesting story in the San Francisco Examiner, August the 24th, tells what preceded the canoe ride. It says that there was a party of seven that gathered at the home of a pediatrician up on this lake. It was right near Lake Placid where the Olympic Games were. And as I say, he was supposed to go to New York. He was studying the Magic Flute by Mozart, and he was to conduct it 3 weeks later at the New York City Opera. A party of seven gathered in the home of a pediatrician, Dr. Ginger Weeks, located 40 yards from the pond's edge. Rosinski, this was his friend that he was staying with, the son of the famous conductor and the mother, the widow of the famous conductor Rosinski, Archer Rosinski, who had a summer cabin up on this lake. The dinner party consisted of Mr. Simmons and Mr. Rosinski, his friend, also a musician, and his mother, and, in quotes, a London-based member of the U.S. Foreign Services and his wife, and another woman who was an ex-ambassador somewhere. Now, this is not wire service. It's special to the San Francisco Examiner from Lake Placid. Two people from the Foreign Service and one who's an ex-ambassador from somewhere. It just not mentioned at all. It reminds me of the luncheon that Adlai Stevenson had before he walked down the streets in London and fell dead and obviously was poisoned, and he was in the company of people from the CIA at this particular luncheon. Now, Simmons goes to dinner parties dressed for dinner. It may not be formal at a summer cabin. He has on his shoes and jacket. And he's out on a boat as if he was posing for a picture. There were two people on the property of where the ambassador and the Foreign Service were, this Dr. Ginger Weeks. And allegedly, one of the women thought he was so photogenic, she wanted to take a picture of him. He was supposed to be posing for a picture against the background of a dazzling sunset. This is the story of the driver for the Lake Placid Fire Department. He stood up, which you don't do in a canoe. He was silhouetted, and they wanted to take his picture. This is in the newspaper account of the story. Doesn't say, okay, they want to take a picture. They have the lens taken. He stands up. Where's the picture? And then all of a sudden he falls over, and they said the next thing they saw was the canoe going around in circles. He didn't appear. 10 days later, the body was found. He allegedly stood up to pose for a picture. David Emery up in the Bay Area called me and said he was very suspicious. Was there a frogman or somebody who pulled him in, that he went under and didn't hold on the boat, never came up again, 3 weeks from his great introduction to the music and Mozart of New York City conducting there. According to one San Francisco Examiner story, September the 1st, no one saw Mr. Simmons enter the water. All we have is conjecture. People heard a splash. No one came up from the overturned canoe. The state police said they believed it was an accidental drowning. He just fell out, never came to the surface. The pond is surrounded by private homes. And according to another story, August the 23rd, he must have had a heart attack or something. And goodness knows what the something was, but he was the first black conductor of a major symphony orchestra in the United States who went out on a boat. He had made musical history. He had worked with all the accomplished musicians in this country. He loved Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven, and his new territory was Wagner. Lots of luck, Simmons. You know, you just can't make that circle of the music society and be black. It will never happen, and it didn't happen. And whatever happened to him, we don't know, but the circumstances were so convoluted. Now, Chief of Police Gates in Los Angeles came out with a suggestion. He's being sued and under criticism for the chokehold where 14 black people have been choked by the Los Angeles Police Department that they tried to blame on their blood and cells doesn't circulate. You know, it's different. Not that they're held tighter by the throat, but that their blood doesn't circulate right. So they suggested, there's an article in the paper this last week, that Rockwell International suggested, in place of this chokehold, that they use a bolo-type weapon, a glue-like substance, and a device that temporarily interrupts the brain. So if Rockwell has this substance, and if there's a laser gun or some kind of a gun or something that could shoot out at Calvi when he's in the canoe, or if he was told to go out and pose for a picture that these women want a picture, why else would he leave a dinner when he goes there and meets an ambassador and people from a foreign service? I doubt that he'd say, excuse me, I want to go out on a canoe. He might have been told, I don't know what the circumstances were that got him to the boat, but he may have been told, we've got some music fans of yours that just want to take your picture. And once he was on that boat, for some reason, he went in and didn't come back. Now, there was an article from the Houston Chronicle that may or may not have anything to do with Calvin Simmons, but it has something to do with somebody, and it's an important story, which didn't make the wire service, but sent to me from a friend in Houston, Texas, who sends me many, many articles. It said, some police suspected he was a foreign agent, French citizen suicide, here a mystery. And the thing that caught my eye about this so-called agent, Patrick Frederick Gerville, 27, suspected of being a foreign agent, was that he was a scuba diver. He was suggested by police he was a professional scuba diver and a dog trainer. He'd been in the United States since April from France, and he stayed at the Best Western Hotel, one of them he was working, he said, for a Houston-based oil company. He was well-dressed. He seemed to be well-off, meticulously dressed, man-of-the-world Frenchman, working for a Houston oil company. Now, when he got into town, he asked for a security guard, according to the Houston Chronicle. This is September the 1st, 1982. The accident was in August 23rd, when Calvin Simmons went into the water. It said that he came into town, and he solicited early for a bodyguard to protect him because there may be an unknown foe, and he came to Houston to collect some money. He was going to get some cash, according to this article, and he came to Houston on a business deal. Now, he had hired a bodyguard that night, and then for the excuse that he was drunk in the lounge and bothering people, the Houston police took him into the police department. If he had a bodyguard that night, I don't know why they would take him to the police department. But at that point, he took some cyanide, dropped his head between his legs, his ears turned purple, he started bleeding from the mouth. They went to the hotel room where he also had the accoutrements like Gary Powers was supposed to take if the U-2 flight was caught over the Soviet Union and was known as a weather plane, which he didn't take. That's history already for many of you. This fellow took the cyanide pill, but then they went to the room, they said it was unusual for anybody to be walking around with cyanide, much less to keep it in the room. So that his background is not known. He had various passports. He had his papers. He said he worked in Houston. He had a Nevada driver's license, and he was an excellent scuba diver, and he had the necessary poisons, and goodness knows, maybe he had some other kind of poison. And what cities was he in before he went to Houston, and who was he being paid by, and why did he think he would be killed, and what was the other poison for, and why did he take this after the Houston police picked him up? He took the cyanide. Now, you can't make two connections except that he was a scuba diver being paid for something. He obviously didn't want his traces. If he thought somebody was going to kill him, he wouldn't kill himself. If somebody's going to off you the night you're going to be paid, working for Houston Oil Company with a license from Rena, that's like Senator Nolan of California committing suicide because he thinks somebody's going to kill him. The whole thing is preposterous, but that is the story. And Calvin Simmons' mystery is Muddy Waters, and the story coming out of Lake Placid. The people at the dinner were not even mentioned. Very carefully avoided an ambassador from somewhere. Now, there was another accident that may or may not be interesting that has some little subtle overtones, and I'll just give you about 5 minutes of it, and that was the car accident of Janet Gaynor and Mary Martin and Janet Gaynor's husband and Mrs. Martin's friend and companion and producer who was killed in the car accident. The next day, there was a photograph of Janet Gaynor and Mary Martin at a department store promotion for a cosmetic product sold in Los Angeles. They have had their picture for iMagnon selling Velvederm. It cost $42 an ounce, and it was a cosmetic created by Dr. Sam Glass in Los Angeles, an endocrinologist. I happen to know the whole case because I've known Sam Glass all of my life, since I can ever remember. He's been a friend of the family's. Now, these women were promoting a particular face cream. But when the accident took place, the man that hit them had an interesting career. He was a security guard. There were allegations he worked for the San Francisco Police Department. In the ambulance going to, when he was picked up with the cab driver to see if they needed care or take him to the jail, and he was released immediately with $350 put down, he was not incoherent. According to the cab driver, who never had an accident before in his life, he was raving all the way to the hospital about the Jews, how he hated Jews, and there was this tremendous anti-Semitic overtone. He had a friend whose car he was using from Denver, Colorado. He was from Denver, Colorado. He lived in the Bay Area. He managed a lot of department stores, apartment houses in San Francisco. He knew his way around. He worked as a security guard and with the police. He had chased another woman. He was arrested for allegedly a hit-runner assault with the car to attack somebody, and she jumped on the hood of the car, and as usually happens, he got off with serving a certain amount of time in public service and was not reprimanded in any particular way. So he was out loose managing apartment houses, and he went into these particular women who have been in business selling this face cream, Dr. Glass's at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. It just happens to be a Jewish doctor. iMagnon was a Jewish firm. It was taken over later as a large corporate, but it was started by Jews. The women have worked closely with Jewish people, and whether he knew something and was aiming for them, I don't know. But he was not, apparently, according to this person, really drunk. He was in a different world, and all he thought about was himself. He didn't ask who he hit or what happened. So his reaction was very funny and consistent with somebody who really wanted to do a job. And then in the Los Angeles Times and in the Chronicle today, September 13th, there's an article, "Man accused of hitting actresses loses his license." Now that's a funny thing. He hit the actresses, so he lost his license. He killed a man, and now they're making it look like he lost his license because he hit the women. A person in the car was dead, and Janet Gaynor is still in critical trouble. There were multiple injuries of these people, but all of a sudden he's lost it because he hit the women. another person who sells cosmetics, a different kind of person, one day earlier had an accident also. And she links, and this is a little broader subject, she links back to Clay Shaw, the Permadex operation, to Licio Gelli, to the P2 Masonic Lodge, and the International Fascista Network. That's Princess Marcella Borghese. Now, she was in New York City visiting one of her children, and she's the founder of a cosmetic company, which, according to the UPI, she was touring around to sell her new face cream. She was embarking on a nationwide tour to promote her new cream. So you have these women opposed competing in the same kind of merchandise with their $40, $42 an ounce makeup. She belongs to this very vicious, fascist, far-right-wing network of Hitler and Mussolini's leg men before and after the war. She, according to the article, she caters to wealthy, high-fashion clients. Also, she fell in a bathtub in New York City and severely burned herself by scalding water just at the time that Mr. Gelli is coming home. She's in a hospital, New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center. She couldn't turn the water off, and the hot water was on her for 30 minutes, and she was scalded unconscious in a tub with hot running water. This is Princess Marcella Borghese. Now, her name comes up in the Torbett document, in the book that Paris Lamone did on the Kennedy conspiracy. She also was in the address book of Clay Shaw, the gentleman who worked with the International Fascista Group and made the connections in New Orleans to the people who killed John Kennedy and also the crime syndicate, the Carlos Marcello gang. In his notebook, Clay Shaw has Princess Principessa Marcella Borghese, Via Tirola Street in Rome, Italy, phone number 687-448. Clay Shaw was very familiar with this Princess Marcella Borghese, and also she's mentioned in Clay in the book The Kennedy Conspiracy by Paris Flamone. This princess is mentioned. When I was looking up the references to Clay Shaw's notebook with Marcella Borghese in there, I came across the name Theo Savory Brilliant, and they shared an apartment, Clay Shaw and the Brilliants, in Mexico, and they have her number and address and also Memphis, Tennessee under it. As soon as I came from New Orleans in 1967 and went to meet Jim Garrison and to help him make connections of the Clay Shaw role in New Orleans to the Dallas connections in the murder of John Kennedy, I wasn't home 3 days before the Theo Savory Brilliants wanted to meet me at the Thunderbird bookstore, which was out in the valley in those days, Carmel Valley. It's moved out to the mouth of the valley now, but we used to call that the Casbah, where all the spies were, and I was surrounded by Clay Shaw's buddies wanting to know what I was doing in New Orleans and so forth. In the Paris Flamone book, Kennedy Conspiracy, page 224, and again, David Emery up north was the one that quickly found these references, the name and address of Principessa Marcella Borghese. And she's related to Prince Valerio Borghese, referred to as the Black Prince or the new Duce of the Movimento Social Italiano. She's a relative of those people who would put in the next Il Duce, who worked with Licio Gelli and Paul Marcinkus, Roberta Calvi, Pope Paul VI, Pope John Paul II. They're still operating. It's been since 1967 that these names surfaced in Italy and in New Orleans, and in 1968-69 in Paris Flamone's book. But they're still traveling around and operating, and this new Duce, the one that's related to her, is described as anti-British and anti-American. And they've been trying to break the banks of America, break the banks of Great Britain, get tremendous loans, not pay them back, and force us into economic crisis, because Adolf Hitler had a very carefully planned. He stated, if you want to take America, take South America first, so that the network from Rome to South America, Central America, and Europe and Madrid became very tight. And as I say, this particular lady is still surfacing. Another name was in the news this week who surfaced. He's operating, and he's named in the Torbett document, working with the International Fascist Group, and that's Clifford Jones. I'll turn this tape over now, and we'll take a 1 minute break, then we'll go back and I'll refer to Clifford Jones, who's mentioned in the Torbit document, and his role in the Kennedy assassination, now located in Greece, wanting to open up a casino in Greece. Andreas Papandreou's government was smart enough to turn it down, but these people are still very much in business. You on the past, a lot on the past, but it's soon the anniversary of Kennedy's death, and you can remember some of that network, I hope. I'll be back with you next week. This is KAZU in Pacific Grove.